Have you ever wondered why English spelling is so weird? Why tough, though, through, and bow all have O-U-G-H, but they sound completely different? Well, you're not alone, and you're not broken. The language is. Welcome to The Fluent Edge, the podcast for advanced English speakers who want to polish their language and level up their communication in high-performance environments.
I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, executive coach, author, mindset strategist. If you want to lead with clarity, build resilience, and communicate with authenticity and power, this podcast will help you think and act at a higher level.
And I'm Sean Watson, your English communication coach. Each week, I'll help you sharpen your voice, refine your English, and lead with confidence.
Together, we connect language and leadership so you can speak better, lead smarter, and thrive globally.
Today, we're exploring why English pronunciation has evolved into such a complex puzzle and how understanding its 2,000-year history can help demystify the challenges you face. So let's journey through time to uncover how this fascinating linguistic evolution affects English learners today. English is the Frankenstein of languages. What do I mean by that? For the last 2,000 years, we've had several different phases of influence from many, many different sources. So if you think about the story of Frankenstein stitched together from different parts or components, that's basically what English is. So Howie, if you were to spell the word fish with alternative letters, how would you do it?
We could take the sound F and say, well, that's like tough. So the GH is the beginning of fish. Then the I I could think of like women.
Uh-huh.
So there's an O there. And then shun, like attention, T-I. So G-H-O-T-I spells fish.
Exactly. This is a great example of how challenging the language can be. And later on, we'll talk about the different ways to pronounce the four letters O-U-G-H. So what I'd like to talk about first is why English kind of feels like a trap. It looks fairly simple. We have 26 letters. We have 44 sounds. But sometimes learners step in expecting things to be logical or clear, but you quickly discover that there's kind of spelling chaos and very irregular grammar and silent letters as well. So it's not your fault. You're navigating a linguistic labyrinth with no map. And somebody once described English as the tossed salad of languages. What do you think about that quote?
It's evocative and it makes me hungry for dinner. So bad timing, Sean. Now all I can think about is a tossed salad. You talked about chaos, and a friend of mine, like in first or second grade, was reading and he read chaos in school and people made fun of him for that for years. And of course, chaos is what chaos looks like.
Yeah, that's a great story. So 2,000 years ago, Britain was basically made up of several different Celtic languages. And Celtic languages originally came from Central Europe. So we have languages like Welsh, Cornish, Scottish, and Irish Gaelic. And all of these came from the Indo-European family of languages, but they're very, very different from Latin, for example. So the Romans occupied Britain for several centuries, and they brought their own Latin language. And the problem was that Latin had 23 letters in the alphabet at that time, and English already had 33, including consonants and vowel sounds. So already we see a problem. Like, how did the Romans pronounce English words, or how did they mix them with Latin spelling, for example? And then after that, the Germanic invasions happened. There were three different German tribes who came to Britain, and they basically laid the foundation in the 5th century for what we call English today.
I'm already overwhelmed.
Yeah, and then Latin came back with the introduction of Christianity around the 7th century. And that came with Christian missionaries from Rome and elsewhere. And we had new words in English like the word angel or priest or bishop. So suddenly we had a lot of church terms that people in Britain had never heard before. And then to make things even more complicated, the Vikings started to invade. And they also brought all sorts of interesting words into English, like the word skirmish or berserk, or even the word sky. So you can see that it's incredibly complex and layered how the language has evolved. Howie, did you have any questions about any of that?
No, I'm still thinking about salad.
All right.
I guess I'm thinking a little bit about the idea of the alphabet, and this might be beyond what we're talking about, but just this idea that most alphabets started as pictograms, like the sun would be a circle, let's say, or an ox would be a circle with the horns on it. And then this idea that the alphabet would then allow you to speak and then to encode any word, even words that hadn't been made up yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you wanted to create a new word for, you know, rainbow, and you have to go around telling everybody what the word is first, the alphabet was such a powerful tool to then make language universal that we could then invent and create and understand an infinite number of words using just 20 or 23 or 34 or 44 vocalizations. And I'm just in awe of that invention.
Yeah, something else comes to my mind, which is somewhat related, but even the idea of how Western music happens, right? It's based on 12 notes. So everything you hear, every type of jazz or classical or hip hop or rock comes from those 12 notes, basically. And it's true in blues and rock, sometimes you bend the notes. But we see that in many other types of music around the world where you have things called quarter tones in Turkish music or in Indian music or Arabic music or Persian. You've got all of those interesting tones that are between the 12 notes. And I guess before Europeans kind of formalized music in their own particular way, there was a lot more fluidity. It wasn't just 12. There were many more variations between each note.
And I would just hear it as out of tune, as opposed to, right?
Yeah.
Fascinating. Tell me more about why English is such a mess.
So I guess the next layer on the cake is the Norman invasion, which happened in the 11th century. So French from northern France in an area that also had Norse ancestry. So it was a combination of Viking ancestry and French. They basically took over Britain in 1066, and they were there for 300 years. And French became the language of the aristocracy, of the nobility. And everybody else spoke Old English, I would say. So it was this incredible injection of words, like even the word beef. Before French came along, we would always just use the word cow. So if somebody wanted to have dinner, they would say, you know, give me a big piece of cow, which doesn't sound appetizing even to people who do eat meat. That doesn't sound terribly interesting. I think French did a lot to beautify the language. So that was kind of the next layer. And basically, the evolution of Old English during that period was kind of frozen. It didn't have any formalized system. So for about 300 years, while the French were occupying Britain, English just kind of languished. And then the other challenge came to standardize English later on, like when we're talking about even the 14th century, when Chaucer, who's considered the father of British poetry. But if you read Chaucer's poetry from the 14th century, I would challenge any native English speaker to understand even one part of his poetry. And that's how much the language has changed. However, I'm pretty certain that if somebody in Spain were to read a text from the 14th century, they would probably understand that Spanish much more than we would understand our English from that period.
Yeah, well, I needed Cliff Notes to understand Shakespeare.
Exactly. And Shakespeare was 200 years after Chaucer, or 300 years. So we can see this constant evolution of the language. During this period, a lot of words from Greek and additional Latin words came into English because science was really coming into its own and people were trying to find ways of naming things. So I'll give you an example. Like we have the word analysis in English, but to pluralize it, we would have to say analyses. Or crisis, crises. That would be an example of a Greek contribution to the English language. And the next huge problem was the beginning of the printing press. And one of the first major printers in England, his name was William Caxton. And in those days, it was quite difficult to find typesetters or to find people who could actually put everything together in order to print a book. And at that time, the best typesetters were not English-speaking. They were from what we would call Benelux today, Luxembourg, Belgium, Holland. So they were typesetting words in what they thought would be a good way of writing them in English. Like, for example, the word ghost. Why is it G-H at the beginning? Why don't we just say G-O? And apparently that's a Dutch thing. If you look at the name of Van Gogh, for example, you can see that in his name, G-O-G-H, which I think they pronounce like Gogh. So even the typesetters who were involved in the early printing of the English language were not necessarily English speakers. I know that sounds crazy. So they were putting mistakes right into the language. Another example would be the word yacht. Why do we say Y-A-C-H-T for that?
Wow.
So English is about 29% French, 29% Latin, and 26% Germanic, and then the rest is all split up between different languages. So often when people try to be logical with pronunciation, I encourage them to be archaeological, right? They've got to go deeper and understand, you know, why, for example, now when we look at the word knight, like a knight of the king, in Old English, that would be knicht. But at some point, we made the K silent. So I think these are some of the things that make English particularly challenging.
Yeah, I think, you know, silent letters have always been a mystery to me. But as I'm learning Spanish and I'm hearing people speak, it turns out that a lot of letters are functionally silent. Because in Spanish, the word often ends in a vowel and then flows into the next word, which if it begins with a vowel, one of those gets dropped. Sometimes entire phrases get, you know, the same way I would say, how are you doing? I'd say, how you doing?
How you doing? Right.
Almost two or three syllables instead of five or six. Uh-huh. And spoken language seems to follow this pattern of ease. Like the more economical I can be in my speech, the more likely someone is to listen to me, and the languages, eventually they'll get more and more silent letters as we need less and less articulation, less and less vocalization to communicate.
That's a really good point. I mean, if we look at the history of English over the past 2,000 years, I guess we can only expect that it will continue to evolve, because now there are more non-native English speakers who speak English than native speakers. I've heard, for example, that our TH in English might disappear in the future because it's so uncomfortable for people to make that sound where they have to put their tongue between their teeth.
Which TH? We have two different THs, right?
Yeah, so we've got the voiced TH. So if you think of a word like there or that, you can feel, if you touch your throat, you can feel the vibration of the vocal cords vibrating with there, that. Right? And then you have the unvoiced sound, that would be a word like thick. So here, it's exactly the same placement. I'm putting my tongue between my teeth and pushing air through. But one, it begins with my voice, and the other one, it's just simply blowing air.
Have you seen, it's about 10 years old now, it was a Berlitz commercial, and there's a German guy manning the headset as like some sort of naval safety officer, and he gets a call and it says, help, we're sinking, help, we're sinking. And he says, what are you sinking about?
That's excellent. That's a great example, and that's a classic way for people to get around pronouncing the TH. Another way is almost like a T sound, like, what are you thinking? You know, I taught, I heard you. So it's hard to say how the language will sound in another 200 years.
I mean, it's interesting that, you know, now we have recordings. It's almost like typesetting locked certain things in place. It might think like, we're not going to evolve as much because there's more centralization. And, you know, in the U.S., there's something considered like the standard accent, just like in Britain, there's the RP, received pronunciation. And I think certainly television homogenized the speaking of English. But now I think the globalization and the internet might be dehomogenizing it.
Absolutely. I agree with that. We do see that some words, like even the word shall, you know, I shall see you next month, or I shall try to send you a follow-up email tomorrow. And that sounds a little bit quaint to our modern ears. We still use shall when we're starting a meeting. For example, shall we begin? You might hear it as a dance invitation. Shall we dance? But you can feel that it's starting to kind of sound not as current.
Two main interests that we share on this podcast, one is language learning and the other is technology and AI. And I'm also thinking about how language and communication will change when AI becomes more integrated, when you can have your Meta glasses that will put a transcription of what anybody says in any language right in front of you in your language.
Do you think it'll make us lazier?
I think most technology makes most people lazier, from the car to the typewriter to the telephone. I think the issue is, does it make us lazier in ways that make us weaker, less powerful, less resilient?
Right.
And I worry about that with ChatGPT, because it's so easy to get it to create a curriculum for me that it's good enough that I don't have to think about it. And I've skipped a step of adding my own value. And so I pay attention to how I use it as a tool to enhance my output rather than a tool to replace my experience and sensitivity.
Right. I think that's a great approach. I think we should always think about our intention when we're engaging with all of these new tools so that it doesn't become something that we're escaping into or something that makes us mentally weaker or lazier, but it's something that enhances what we're doing already. I know our time is quite limited.
I think people are going to be interested enough that if they have the time, they want to listen to the rest of it. And if not, we'll see you next time, but we invite you to stay.
Okay, good. So I just wanted to share something on the screen briefly here. So I said earlier that we would look at these words that have O-U-G-H at the end. Now, originally, this sound was in the throat. Like if you think of the word loch, like Loch Ness Monster. In Scottish Gaelic, they talk about a loch. So on the left side, you can see the IPA symbols for these words. The International Phonetic Alphabet is quite an effective way to learn the pronunciation of a language. However, you have to teach yourself the IPA alphabet. You have to be comfortable with that. You usually see it when you open a dictionary or look at a dictionary online, but some people find it more difficult and they just prefer to understand the English without looking at the IPA. So here you can see, just for example, like the uff sound, right? Rough, tough, enough, right? So we could spell them differently, like rough could be R-U-F-F. The good news about O-U-G-H is that we don't have that many words in English that follow this type of spelling. That's the good news. So it's not like you have to learn 300 words with O-U-G-H. And the next one, cough or off or trough. And typically when I work with Russian or Ukrainian or Polish speakers, they would say oh, cough, trough. So I also have to introduce this ah sound, this more relaxed jaw ah sound, almost like A-W, like awesome. And then the next one we have is the ow sound. And here we've got bow. Bow is like the large branches of a tree as it extends into the rest of the tree. And then plow. And so this is the device that people used to use. I guess they still use it around the world to plow the soil. And then the last one, in Canadian English, this O-U sound is a little bit shorter. We would say drought. But I think in the U.S., sometimes you would say drought, drought.
Drought. Yeah. Well, the classic difference is like, I can always tell a Canadian from the way they say about.
About. That's right. Yeah. Trout. I went out to get some trout. I was walking about. So these are super important to learn. Maybe we will simplify spelling. Maybe we'll realize that we just are using
too many extra. Well, we have, right?
That's true.
Plow. Plow is P-L-O-W much more commonly. And
that's
things
right.
Things like burrow.
Yeah.
Is very often like B-O-R-O.
Exactly.
And even like though is, if you're typing a message, it's perfectly understood. Andable is T-H-O.
And speaking of burrow, you can see further down the list, in some regions, it's pronounced like burrah, burrah, right? And this is the schwa sound. And even when people have studied English for many years, many are not familiar with this pronunciation term. So the schwa is an empty vowel sound that we usually put on the unstressed syllable. So for example, if I say I am Canadian, Canadian, I'm not saying Canadian, I'm saying Canadian or American, right?
Yeah.
And then finally, down below, I may have skipped one, but that's okay, with the word up or hiccup. This is old spelling. It looks like hiccough.
Right.
So we're going to invite listeners to record themselves. You can choose one sentence. You could write your own as long as you're using words with O-U-G-H, or you could record all of them. There's a link in the show notes. You can leave a short message there and we may feature your voice on the show later on. And this, I think, could be a really interesting dynamic interactive feature of the podcast in the future to invite people to try pronouncing something.
I'd love to, to start this process of communication and interaction with our audience. I'm really excited about that.
And just for fun, maybe we could just try reading one of the sentences just to kind of help them out a little bit.
Though the tough cough and hiccup plow me through, I soldier on.
Nicely done. Yeah, and soldier
on. I feel like
on,
Sir John Gielgud.
That's right, exactly. Yes, that master thespian, Shakespearean style.
Around and around the rugged rocks, the ragged rascal ran.
Beautiful. And at the end of that sentence, we have that expression to soldier on, to keep going no matter what, against all hardship or adversity. It's a great expression, to soldier on. People always ask me, well, you know, now I know how difficult and crazy English pronunciation is. What are some tips? And the first thing is don't think of it logically, think of it archaeologically. And then the second one is to practice shadowing. So you could take a clip from YouTube or a TED Talk and try just shadowing a few sentences. You could play a line and pause and try to imitate it immediately and then try it again. The next thing you can do is practice recording yourself. And the thing is, with our own voices, most of us don't really hear what we sound like. That's the honest truth. So I think real progress starts when you listen back. You've got to listen to something. So between my sessions, I strongly encourage my clients to record themselves. And often they're quite surprised with what they sound like.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is mastering word stress and sentence music. So for example, if I say, I want to buy a car, or I want to buy a new car. So there we've got three words, want, buy, car, that need to be stressed. Mm-hmm. But again, we could also focus on new, right? I want to buy a new car, right? So what you can do is take a sentence and try to say it in different ways, depending on how many words you have. So I just want to encourage listeners and just say, you know, you're not bad at English. You're just speaking a language that is layered with 2,000 years of history, migration, war, miscommunication, and every irregularity is a clue. It's a memory. It's a mirror of its past. So maybe English isn't completely broken. It's just really, really experienced.
Right? I like that. And just that coherence of understanding why it's so hard, I'm hoping that our audience will relax and allow that fact to give themselves a break. Because we've all been in situations where we're relaxed and all of a sudden we have access to a lot more. And so the meta point of this conversation for me is it's really hard, and therefore everyone has these problems, and therefore you get to relax and not have to judge yourself.
Absolutely. And I think all of us have much more talent to learn pronunciation and to learn languages than we realize. We just have to find the right motivation for doing it. So if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and share the Fluent Edge with friends or colleagues who are working on their English or leadership communication. And if you encounter any unusual words or pronunciations you'd like us to explain, please message us or leave a comment.
And if you're looking for support beyond this podcast, we have each opened up one-on-one spots for people who want to get coached by us. So I work with professionals and leaders to avoid burnout, to lead with purpose, to communicate effectively, to create teams that hum. And
if you're working on your English clarity, your global presence, or confident communication, you can book a free discovery call with me to explore how we can sharpen your voice and impact together. So subscribe, share, and check the description for your downloads and tools.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Keep thinking clearly, communicating boldly, and leading with your voice.
Stay sharp, stay human, stay fluent.